This portion of Performance Today is supported by a grant from Alaska Airlines. Proud to be a part of the Kodiak community and pleased to offer daily jet service to Anchorage and beyond. For your passenger and cargo needs, visit them on the web at alaskaair.com.
It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, overlooking downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 43 degrees right now. We kind of got that partly sunny condition that we were looking for yesterday. We're looking for a slight chance of rain showers for the rest of the day, possibly mixing with snow afternoon, then gradually ending. Partly sunny skies, they're still saying, with a high near 43, which is where we are now. West winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour today, and for tonight, we're looking for scattered snow showers after midnight. Coming up on the midday news, more new COVID-19 cases for Kodiak. The Lutik Museum begins a two-year project. And dramatic news for the Pebble Mine. These stories and more right after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Winsor Johnston. President-elect Joe Biden is reiterating his message of unity ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Speaking in Wilmington, Delaware today, Biden urged the country to come together and not lose faith as the coronavirus continues to grip the nation.
America's not going to lose this war. We'll get our lives back. Life is going to return to normal, I promise you. This will happen. This will not last forever. So, yes, it's been a really hard year, particularly hard for over 250,000 people and their families. But I still believe we have much to be thankful for.
The Biden transition team was granted access to public health officials this week and plans to meet with members of the White House Coronavirus Task Force in the coming weeks. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in the United States has surpassed 12.5 million. The death toll is approaching 260,000. The incoming Biden administration says it plans to create a new high-profile domestic climate team at the White House. NPR's Frank Ordonez reports the transition team is still hashing out the details.
The coordinator could lead an office or policy council akin to the domestic policy council, but the actual structure is currently under discussion. There are concerns, however, about giving the new team as much power as the domestic policy council because of what it may signal about other priorities, like racial equality. But those close to Biden, like John Podesta, who served as climate policy coordinator under President Obama, say this issue must be addressed head-on.
You have no credibility in the international sphere unless you're doing a lot to get back on track domestically.
A source familiar with the transition discussion says eventually there may be a cabinet agency that focuses on climate because the challenge is not going away. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
Immigration authorities have temporarily closed a facility in South Texas where migrant children were held in chain-link enclosures that critics denounced as cages. NPR's Joel Rose reports the building is being renovated.
The U.S. Border Patrol is temporarily closing a major facility in McAllen, Texas, known as the Central Processing Center. The converted warehouse became infamous during the Trump administration's crackdown on migrant families and children for its chain-link enclosures. The Rio Grande Valley remains a hotspot for illegal crossings, but the building has stood mostly empty this year because immigration authorities are quickly expelling 90% of the unauthorized border crossers they encounter. A spokesman for U.S. Customs and Border Protection says the facility will reopen in 2022 with updated accommodations and a recreation area for younger children. Joel Rose, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow was down 173 points. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has announced 10 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough, including one case tested on the 19th of November and not reported, which was a close contact of a previous case. There is another reported close contact case, 4 community spread cases, and 4 cases under investigation. This brings the case count to 256 since the start of the pandemic in the Kodiak Island Borough, with 79 cases currently classified as active. 3 individuals completed their isolation and have been removed from the active case count. In 2018, the Aleutic Museum began a 2-year project dedicating to documenting and awakening beading arts in the Aleutic culture. In the final weeks of the project, the museum is producing instructional videos to share a piece of Aleutic culture with the world. KMXT's Jared Griffin has this story.
And then we push this up to tighten it. Tie a knot in here where it's hidden in between the fold.
The Pingwat Beads Project began in 2018 when the Aleutic Museum borrowed from a museum in France a rare set of beaded garments collected nearly 150 years ago from Kodiak. But this wasn't just a case of one museum borrowing another's artifact, as Aleutic Museum Chief Curator Amy Steffian explains.
The idea was to have, to create a documentation of the pieces and to create a replica set so that when they return to France, we have a set for our collection. And we put out a call for beaders. June Pardue, who is a master artist, a very talented Aleutic elder and artist and beater, led the groups, and they studied the pieces in the gallery and recreated them over like a 5-day period.
Filmmaker Joshua Brandstetter turned that story into a short documentary film called Pingwat, nominated in 2019 for Best Documentary Short by the American Indian Film Institute.
Go through the stitching all over again to ensure that it's not going to come apart. We want this to last a long, long time. This really means a lot to me, for everyone to get together and to work like they did a long time ago.
While revitalizing this artistic practice was important for the museum and reclaiming, in a way, artifacts taken from the island over a century ago, another goal was to share beading as an important symbol of Aleutic identity.
The other thing is it preserves the information from the workshop. You know, what the artists have learned is now captured on film, and it can be used for a long, long time, and it's been we're preserving all of this in an archive in the museum as well, so that, you know, 50 years from now, these artists' grandchildren can see them beading.
In the Aleutic culture, for instance, beaded headdresses were often ceremonial, symbols of wealth, or representing passage into adulthood or respect for the natural and spirit worlds. Many of the decorations and patterns on beaded garments were quite lavish, so for advanced beaders, the museum published a pattern book last year documenting how the beaded replicas were made. And the museum hosted a public beading workshop led by Aleutic artist June Pardue in late 2019.
But then the pandemic came. So we rearranged. We created a video. We worked with one of the artists, Kayla Christensen, and did a little video of Kayla making the bracelet. We made bracelet kits. We sent the kits out. We got kits to the schools to use with their students, and we created written instructions. So we created this sort of little set of items, the kits, the written instructions, and the video, so that people could do this activity.
Steffian also called it
one of those COVID tunities, as somebody said to me the other day.
So the final piece of this 2-year-long, or 150-year-long, international art project is the production of 3 instructional videos that teach these basic beading skills. The first video is available now on the Aleutic Museum website, and the other 2 will be posted over the next 2 weeks. But the ultimate purpose of these videos is to encourage people to take Pingwat back to the world.
So we want to train this generation of artists and create a cohort of people who can practice the art and advance their skills, but we also want to encourage them to teach it to others, to novices, to people who are learning or interested.
You can find more resources about beading on the Aleutic Museum website, aleuticmuseum.org.
Pingwat bead, makut pingwat chuju nachtut. These beads are beautiful.
From Kodiak, the traditional land of the Aleutic, I'm Jared Griffin.
The first beading video posted this week features artist Natalia Schneider demonstrating how to create a pair of dangle earrings modeled on ancestral examples. The next two videos will feature demonstrations on making beaded necklaces and beaded cuffs for wrists or ankles. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has denied a permit for the proposed Pebble Mine, a project that fishermen and tribes in the Bristol Bay region have been fighting for more than a decade. The Corps says it determined that Pebble's plan does not comply with Clean Water Act guidelines and that the project is not in the public interest. Pebble Limited Partnership says it's not giving up on the project, which would have been one of North America's largest open-pit mines. The company says it's focusing on a possible appeal of the agency's decision. For now, though, the decision appears to be a death blow for the mine. The incoming Biden administration is likely to oppose the project, as the Obama administration did. A rebooted version of Raven Airlines will resume scheduled flights to Unalaska and several other Alaska communities in less than a week. Raven Alaska CEO Rob McKinney says federal authorities granted approvals last Friday.
So this latest development is the last piece that we've been waiting for basically since August when we filed our application with the DOT, is that we were found fit, willing, and able to provide scheduled service to the public. And the DOT found that all the objections had no merit, and we are now turned loose to go fly with whatever frequency to whatever destination that we want.
Twice daily service between Unalaska and Anchorage is scheduled to begin next Monday, November 30th.
We're going to have flights to Eniac, Cold Bay, Fairbanks, Homer, Kenai, Sandpoint, and we're working on with the DOT on restarting service to St. Paul.
Raven began offering regular charter flights earlier this month. That was an interim measure designed to bridge the service gap until it received final DOT approval to move forward with scheduled commercial service. The airline was limited to 4 public charter flights per week to each destination and couldn't transfer passengers to other airlines. McKinney says charters will no longer be necessary.
That was just workaround until we got this final authority. So now there's no need for that, and we can go back and pursue agreements with other airlines, and we're working hard on that already.
McKinney says tickets will cost around $549 one way between Anchorage and Unalaska, but prices could be subject to change depending on whether or not flights fill up. And, he adds, there will continue to be a discount for Aleutian Island residents, a policy the airline instituted with its public charter service.
For now, we're keeping the local fare. If you have a government ID with a Aleutian address, there's a $399 one-way fare for local residents.
McKinney says they're in contact with Alaska Airlines to resume a partnership and allow Unalaskans to use the larger airline's mileage program to purchase tickets in the future. The airline will be flying the de Havilland Dash 8 100 series aircraft with a 29 or 37 passenger capacity depending on the destination, says McKinney. The aircraft will likely make a refueling stop on flights between Unalaska and Anchorage.
But I'm also happy to announce I'm in final negotiations for a Dash 8 300 series that holds up to 50 people but has extended range tanks and will consistently always be able to make Anchorage to Dutch Harbor nonstop.
McKinney says he hopes to have those up and running and in use by next spring. In the meantime, he says the airline has brought back previous staff to work and fly the routes, including pilots with experience flying in Unalaska and its short runway.
We are starting to bring back a percentage of Pinair employees, but we started with the core staff and mechanics and pilots and flight attendants that worked for Corvus on the Dash 8 aircraft previously.
Raven Air Group filed for bankruptcy in April in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. After a lengthy bidding process, a Southern California commuter service called Float Shuttle struck a last-minute deal to buy Raven's operating certificates, rebooting the company into the newly branded Raven Alaska. In a related story, scheduled air service to Cold Bay is being canceled through December 1st. That's expected to also disrupt service to Unalaska, where the only commercial flight option requires a connection in the Unalaska Peninsula Village. Sam Dapsevich, a public information officer with the Alaska Department of Transportation, says cancellations are due to an increase in the number of cases of COVID-19 in the small community of roughly 50 people. Since Saturday, 11 residents had tested positive for the virus.
We worked with local entities and we coordinated with airlines and decided that the safest path forward at this point is to cancel scheduled large air carrier service to Cold Bay Airport through December 1st.
Davovich says this is the first closure of this kind during the pandemic at any state of Alaska airport. The airport is expected to remain open with reduced aircraft, rescue, and firefighting capabilities. Unalaska City Manager Aaron Reindeers says the DOT's action specifically applies to Alaska Airlines jet service between Anchorage and Cold Bay, but she says Grant Aviation, which serves as a kind of a shuttle between Unalaska and Cold Bay, is also canceling service to the Alaska Peninsula Village.
It's my understanding that both Alaska Airlines and Grant Aviation are coordinating with their current ticket holders on either, you know, rescheduling their flights or reimbursing.
Ranger says it's startling to hear the DOT would cancel flight service.
But given the positive COVID cases in Cold Bay, it's probably the most responsible move. And I'm not going to pretend to know all the details of you know what Cold Bay is experiencing, nor you know the decision making process that DOT went through. But it seems like the right move at this point.
The DOT's decision canceled flights for Wednesday and this coming Saturday. The airlines are expected to resume service on Wednesday, December 2nd. In the meantime, Rangers suggested Unalaskans look into some sort of local charter flight to get on and off the island. A new hydroelectric plant in Cake means the Kuprianoff Island Village would no longer have to rely solely on diesel generators for its electricity. The multi-million dollar Gunnick Creek Hydro Project came online earlier this fall, and its proponents hope it will lower the cost of energy and bring the remote community one step closer to energy independence. KCAW's Aaron McKinstry has this report.
Residents of Cake have been experiencing intermittent power outages this fall as the Gunnick Creek plant comes online. That's all part of normal growing pains, says Jody Mitchell, the CEO and general manager of the Inside Passage Electric Cooperative, or IPEC. The nonprofit provides electricity to a handful of Southeast Alaska towns.
When you build a new generation project in a remote village, you don't just turn it on like you just plug in a new appliance. You have to do a lot of adjustments and tweaking, basically to optimize the hydro output and minimize the diesel output.
Aside from a small solar project, Cake relies on diesel generators for electricity. Since the Gunnick Creek Hydro Project was turned on in September, it saved the town 2,500 gallons of diesel fuel. IPEC will still rely on diesel generators during dry times and as a backup source of electricity, but Mitchell says that at a minimum, the plant will cut diesel consumption in half over time. And hopefully, that will translate to a reduction in rates.
The less fuel we have to consume, that's the savings that gets passed on to the customer.
A quest for more affordable energy is at the heart of Cake's exploration of renewables like solar, biomass heating, and now hydro. The cost of living in rural Alaska is high, and residential electricity rates in Cake are more than double the national average.
Well, obviously, we're paying too much for electricity and for heating.
That's Joel Jackson, the president of Cake's tribal government, the Organized Village of Cake. He and other community leaders worked with IPEC during the project's planning stages.
There's no silver bullet that will, you know, sustain us off the grid, but I think using a couple of different things as we move forward will lessen the cost of living here.
Whether this new plant will translate to lower rates is complicated for a variety of reasons. For one, IPEC's rates are based on sales. The more electricity they sell, the lower their rates are. So if enough residents implement energy-saving measures like installing LED lighting or energy-efficient appliances, their rates may actually go up. Also, because IPEC serves multiple communities, any savings from the hydro would be distributed throughout the region. And residential customers benefit from something called power cost equalization, a state subsidy that helps offset the cost of energy. As IPEC's costs go down, so do the state subsidies. But that program doesn't include schools, businesses, and churches, Mitchell says. So that could translate to lower prices for goods and services.
The goal is there, if we can reduce rates to those entities, they can provide more jobs. It will spur economic development in our communities.
IPEC paid for the bulk of the nearly $9 million project with state and federal grant funds. The dam was already in place, built by the Army Corps of Engineers in 2007 to help secure Cake's water supply. IPEC constructed a penstock and a powerhouse, and Jackson expressed concern about the possible impact of construction on the salmon runs in Gunnett Creek.
There's always negative sides to things, and of course, you know, it's a fish stream, so I hope that don't disturb, you know, the fish return in there.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game conducted site visits as part of Gunnett Creek's permitting process, and their reports show limited to no impact on fish runs. Gunnett Creek also supports a hatchery, and manager Ryan Schumann says the hydro plant will actually help them by providing additional sources of power and clean water.
We have been working cooperatively with them throughout their project to provide help whenever we can with whatever they need. And on the other side of that coin, they have helped us with a great many things as we've been working to get our project up and online.
Gunnett Creek is one of around 20 hydro projects across southeast Alaska. It's IPEC's third, and there's a fourth in the works in Angoon. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Demand for salmon and halibut increases amid tightening supplies. More after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at amc.org.
Market watchers say get your Pacific salmon and halibut now as supplies tighten heading into a big lineup of holidays. Alaska salmon competes in a tough global market and supplies are down by all producers. Even salmon supplies from Russia, Alaska's biggest competitor, have come in well below forecast at 845 million pounds, the lowest poundage since 2009. By comparison, Alaska's total salmon catch this year totaled about 518 million pounds. The overall supply of frozen sockeye is considered low, with Alaska's catch coming in at just over 46 million and fisheries from Canada and the West Coast struggling to produce any reds at all. Watch for the market to remain short, says Kyla Ganton of TradeX, a global seafood trading company based in Canada for over 30 years.
With a strong fresh market and continued consumer demand, we don't believe there will be much headed and gutted sockeyes after December, and 2 to 4 pound will remain short for the foreseeable future.
TradeX says it's even tighter for chum salmon. Ganton says that's flipped the market on its head.
With Puget Sound's chum fishery essentially finished for the year, we recommend you start thinking about your future buys and the outlook of using another species. The market will hit a point where chums will be unavailable.
Supplies of Pacific halibut also are tight, heading into a lineup of holidays that includes Chinese New Year on February 12th, followed by Lent beginning early on February 17th. About 22 million pounds of Pacific halibut is available for market. Ganton says tight supplies could have buyers looking east.
Halibut buyers that should have purchased all their needs before the season ended are about to find themselves in a predicament and may have to look for alternatives such as Atlantic halibut. With that being said, we urgently advise you to get your purchasing needs in now, long enough to get you through to Chinese New Year.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 25th day of November, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 9:16 a.m. and it will set again at 4:37 in the afternoon, giving us 7 hours and 17 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 22 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 5:20 this afternoon. That will be a 1.8-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:18 p.m. of 6.5 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5 a.m. on the east side of 2.2 feet, followed by a high tide tomorrow morning at 11:22 a.m. of 8.4 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 5:50 p.m. That will be a 2.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:48 p.m. of 12.2 feet. Your low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 5:48 a.m. of 3.4 feet, and your high tide on the east, on the west side for tomorrow morning will be 11:53 a.m., almost noon, of 14.2 feet. 42 degrees, we've actually lost a degree in the last hour. Slight chance of rain showers, they're saying, mixing with snow this afternoon, then gradually ending. They're still calling for partly sunny skies. West wind to 25 miles per hour are expected to gust as high as 30. For tonight, scattered snow showers after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy skies overnight, gradually becoming mostly clear with a low around 33. For Thanksgiving Day, they're saying scattered snow showers before 1 p.m., then rain. Mostly cloudy skies, high near 39 on Thanksgiving. South wind gusting as high as 25 miles per hour. Your chance of precipitation 60%, but they're now saying little or no snow accumulation expected for Thanksgiving Day. Still, a good day to stay inside and eat. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front over the western Gulf Wednesday morning will move into the eastern Gulf early Thursday morning. A 994 millibar low, 110 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak City this morning, has moved over to Prince William Sound and gone to 995 millibars. Resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanak has a gale warning today with southwest wind to 35 knots right now. Should decrease to 25 knots this afternoon. Seas to 21 feet. For tomorrow, south wind to 25 knots and seas to 15 feet. Marmot Island to Sitkanak offshore east side. Shelikof Strait over on Kodiak's west side. Small craft advisory through tonight. Southwest wind to 30 knots and seas to 10 feet in the Shelikof now. For tomorrow, look for south winds to 15 knots. Seas to 3 feet will build to 5 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Teaneck and Marmot Bays, we have small craft advisories today and tonight. South wind to 30 knots in both cases, seas to 7 feet. Attention water and sewer utility customers, the City of Kodiak is committed to the COVID-19 emergency health response and has extended the deadline to accept applications for the Water and Sewer Utility Relief Program until December 15th. All customers are eligible, literally all customers, and they may apply for financial relief in the form of a one-time utility billing credit of $500. All city water and sewer utility customers are encouraged to apply as soon as possible, and you are able to apply if you have had any expenses at all related to COVID-19. And you can get to the application at the City of Kodiak website or call this city cashier's office at 486-8650.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.